extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer. Crickets? Nah, it's all of you. It's a solo show yet again. David Goss returns next week. In the meantime, we've got Happy Hour again on this Thursday, March 7th. I'll be joined by Minnesota United Sporting Director Khalid Alamad to talk all things Loons, present and future. We're talking Eric Ramsey, the DP spot that looms open, all the roster rules, all the things you want to know, including why he knocked down that wall in the Loons offices. Plus, Mariano Trillo will stop by ahead of this weekend's LAFC Sporting Kansas City match, talking Carlos Vela's future. Looks like it's probably in black and gold, Inter Miami's ceiling, and much, much more, including varying fates for MLS in the CONCACAF Champions Cup. I'm going to tell you who's happy, who's disappointed, but hey, still hopeful, and who is just treading water to stay afloat. Looking at you, Houston Dynamo. Plus, the transfer window isn't closed, and that means MLS clubs and Tom Bogert are still cooking. We've got long-term contract extensions for former MVPs, a $20 million bid for Thiago Almada, and more roster surgery at Inter Miami. Yeah, Inter Miami making more moves. Sadly, we also got to talk injuries. Two of the league's top playmakers go on the shelf this week. Pablo Ruiz signed a five-year contract extension with Real Salt Lake and then hurt his knee. He's out for the season. Tough. Pedro de la Vega's time in Seattle has not started perfectly. He's got a hamstring injury that will not cooperate 6 to 8 weeks on the shelf for De La Vega. Plus, I'm going to give you a reason to watch all the games in match day four. We got a pair of games starting at 2 p.m. Eastern on Saturday. Countdown starts at 6:30 p.m. Eastern on MLS Season Pass. And then that's followed by MLS 360, as always, with wrap-up, finishing things up at 12:30 p.m. Eastern time and on demand whenever you wish. Have a coffee or the free time to dig in. Plus, Inter Miami and two other games on Sunday. So tune in this weekend. All right. Last week, the Garth Lagerwey interview, very proud of that one. All of my solo monologuing, terrible. It was a train wreck. Why is it so much easier to do that, to read a list, to monologue, to just go off when David or Matt are here? Yeah, rhetorical question, I guess. There's nobody here to answer that. So, okay, let's dig into it. CONCACAF Champions Cup. I know you've been sitting down on the couch late nights, Tuesday, Wednesday, and soon to be Thursday, just like I have. First, the good. The Rebs. They blew out Alajuelense 4-0 on a rain-swept night at Gillette Stadium. That was big time because they needed the bounce back after that home opening loss to Toronto FC. Some legends in that Ala lineup as well. Joel Campbell, Celso Borges, but a big performance from the Rebs led by Tomas Csankalay. That's 2 goals for him in that game, 4 goals in 5 matches, and 10 goals in Csankalay's first 18 games. I'm a very proud Golden Boot team owner of Tomas Csankalay, and anybody would be happy to have Esmer Barakatovic on their team. 18 years old, he gets his first goal of the season. He is a boss and affecting games. Hell of a start to 2024 for the youngster, and good news for Revs fans and the organization. Carlos Heel signed a long-term deal to stay in New England. He has the 4th best assist per game average in MLS history, 0.47 per game. Can you, my listeners, which sounds strange to say, name the top 5? I'll give you a hint. One is an active player. I may have mentioned his name in a transfer rumor. Yes, Thiago Almada. Carlos Valderrama is number 1. Marco Echeverri is 2. Preki is 5. And Almada comes in at 3rd with Heel at 4th. A big-time signing to stabilize the Revs long-term. Disappointing, but hope? Draws at home for Orlando against Tigres and the Union against Pachuca. Scoring draw or a win sends both these MLS teams through, but we know the odds when MLS teams go to Mexico. Tigres managed it. They've done this before. Didn't expend a bunch of energy, sat back, let Orlando huff and puff. Luis Muriel started, but only had 1 shot. Orlando didn't create at home, and Tigres tried to push the last team 15 minutes, and now they go home. They can manage that second leg. Just need a win at Universitario to go through. Meanwhile, for the Union, Andre Blake, he's back. Jose Martinez had a big game. One that Jim Curtin, by the way, partially credited to playing against and around his countryman, Solomon Rondon. But shout out to Nathan Harriel. He moved into the middle. Absolutely huge performance in a shutout for a Philly team that needed it. crazy the quality that they can count on out of the academy. Harriell moving into the middle, 22 years old. Jack McGlynn and Quinn Sullivan in the starting lineup, the only players to start all five games for Philly so far this year. It's like another transfer portal for them. They just go pull talent straight out of that academy. Meanwhile, gut punch for Houston. Gutted by injury, gutted in stoppage time by the Columbus Crew and Alexandru Matan. He came off the bench late on, found the bottom corner. Now the Crew control this tie with the away goal and the shutout. Big takeaway, man, it's about depth. It's about quality. Columbus, their first team, the starters, bossed the game, controlled the game. Then they brought Cucho, Christian Ramirez, Superman, Matan, and Yaya Boah off the bench. That is an embarrassment of riches for Will Fernandez. Meanwhile, the Dynamo are trying to fix what ails them, and that is lack of personnel. They're now a draw and two losses in their last three home games. That was the fortress of 2023 that fueled them. Eric Sviatchenko left this game with an injury. Apparently, Houston are looking for a young DP or U22 attacker and trying to get something over the line, but man, they're falling like flies, and the Dynamo got to find a way to stop the bleeding, especially at home. And for those of you watching on Thursday night, you're going to enjoy FC Cincinnati Monterrey, Brandon Vasquez game, plus Nashville and Miami. All right, some transfer news. Just give you the headlines. You can read. You can go on Twitter. You can follow Tom Bogert. Botafogo has made a $20 million offer from Thiago Almada. Apparently, Atlanta says that not for us. We value him at more, which you know because you listened to this podcast and heard the Lagerwey interview. Charlotte getting the 22-year-old Celtic attacker and winger, Leola Bata, over the line. That should be coming soon, according to Bogert. $8 million. Got good production in the Scottish Premier League. 10 goals the last two seasons. Hani Mukhtar, the other former MVP, to sign a long-term extension. He'll stay in Nashville for many years. That's good news for the Coyotes. John Mota to Vitória in Brazil. And Miami have now opened $1.5 million in cap flexibility per Bogert between the Mota and Yedlin moves, and they might be signing Mateus Rojas, the Paraguayan international winger. So it's always busy in Miami. And Diego Luna signed an extension. He's now a U22 player. Meanwhile, Pablo Ruiz goes down, out for the season. Really big blow for RSL. We'll talk about this much, much more on Countdown on Saturday as we lead into the Rocky Mountain Cup this weekend. Plus, Pedro de la Vega, and a big blow for the Sounders, who can't seem to create gilt-edged goal-scoring chances already. He's out for 6 to 8 weeks, so a tough start for him. And one final thing before we get to El Ahmad. Hey, New York City are getting a stadium, and it's got a cube. Beautiful renderings. Love that Citi Field and Arthur Ashe are right next door, and the 7 train is about to be a big deal in New York City. All right, did I forget to breathe? Did I do better than last week? I guess let me know on Twitter. The DMs are always open. All right, let's get happy hour started this week with Minnesota United sporting director and chief soccer officer, Khalid El Ahmad. Khalid, thank you so much for joining us. First of all, I have to ask a serious question off the top. What do you have against never-ending salad and breadsticks, my man? Like, Olive Garden didn't do anything to you.
Nothing. Like, you know, I think I was surprised that one Olive Garden was still around, but... I got fed up on the breadsticks during college. You know, my college staff would take us to Olive Garden all the time. So I understand the beauty, but I thought I didn't know it was still around. So nothing against Olive Garden. And you know, now that you put me on the spot, I might have to go to Olive Garden and support the chain.
You got your fill. You got your fill on road trips. UW Milwaukee. You're a Panther. I want your sort of soccer life story, but let's just skip ahead because there are really interesting connections from your alma mater to soccer in the Twin Cities and soccer royalty in the Twin Cities and beyond. I mean, we're talking Tony Sane, Manny, and Jared Lagos. I mean, the Lagos family just running things in Minnesota. Amos McGee, and then Bob Gansler, coach Sasha Sarovsky. Yeah. Played under Gansler and now is one of the legends of the game, and you are a part of this fraternity. But how did you end up at Milwaukee? Like, that seems out of the way for your upbringing in Sweden.
Yeah, so I think I was, when I was turning, you know, 17, 18, as many other young guys and girls, I had a big dream of becoming a professional footballer, and I was doing pretty well. But whenever I was at my best, I got injured, and my father is well-educated person. So we were talking about a compromise where I could play football, but also not neglect my studies. So he told me, hey, look, you know, you should probably look at the opportunity to go to US on a scholarship. So I think I've said this many times before. I'll never forget. It was a Tuesday night. like 1999, like I think it was like November, December, I started just going online searching, sent an email to New Mexico, Santa Barbara, just various schools, knowing nothing about the divisions, Big East, Big Ten, Horizon League at that time, etc. And then I got to this page of Milwaukee. At that time, I liked black and gold because I was a Boston Bruin fan. I liked the panther as an animal, and I kind of got stuck on the profile of Louis Bennett and just sent an email. And then what I did, I had a rotation to email these schools maybe every other like week, and I send a couple. And then January 2000, this English guy just showed up, middle of the winter, minus 18 degrees, and it was Louis Bennett who showed up. We connected. He's today like probably one of my best friends and a mentor. He told me to take that step, and I left August 14, 2000, and ended up at UWM.
Eating Olive Garden along the way, of course. So let's Jimmy, rewind
Jimmy,
there.
Jimmy John's, Quiznos.
Quiznos. That's a classic college meal right there. Toasted, of course.
Toasted is better.
Now, tell me about the early days, and then we'll get into Minnesota United and all the decisions that you're making now. Like, was there a ball in your crib? How far back does love for the game go in your life and your family's life?
Yeah, look, so I'm a war refugee. I was born in Lebanon in 1981. And we then fled the country in 1989 to get to Sweden. And football's always been an extremely important part of my life. It's helped me, you know, learn a language, integrate. But it was actually in 1986 World Cup. Watching it with my father, I see this little number 10, you know, just tearing it up. And I was like, I want to be like him. And obviously it was Diego Maradona. And I was very little, but I can completely see that in our living room. Hardly went to school when I was little because of the ongoing war. Next day, I think my dad just saw it. He bought me a plastic ball. And since then, I knew what I wanted. I was going to be a top player, or I was going to work at the highest level within football. Then when I came to Sweden, easiest way to get friends, integrate. And for me, football is not just a sport. It's a social movement. It literally is like love of my life, along with my family, wife and kids. And it just kind of always being around the game helped me so much. You know, helped me to come to US, helped me to progress in Sweden, got me to a football school. And it just kind of continued to move me forward. And that took me to college after college, coach, agent, you name it, working for Aalborg, brought Chris Rolfe to Aalborg. I had Marcus Tracy, who works for, I think, for MLS.
Trace is a legend, man. He's a legend.
I have so many connections. My first year in college, I think I was pretty good. I was a freshman All-American third team, and like my PDL team was stacked. Ned Grabavoy, Chris Rolfe. There was four of us that trained with, at that time, I think it was David Sarkin that was the coach. You had Jesse March, Chris Armers, DeMarcus Beadley, Zach Thorington, if you name it. So there's always been a connection to football and then obviously into MLS. When I got injured, I still knew where I was heading. And because I thought, okay, I want to be a CEO or sporting director at the highest possible level, I wanted to make sure I was as different as possible. So I did as many different things within the game so I can connect with staff, fans, and players.
I mean, I noticed that from your resume starting in 98, we're talking data analyst, all different facets of the game. So I was wondering along those lines, given your experiences and the places that you've been, who would be the biggest influence on how you see the game or how you see your job now in building a team? Who is that person, or what is that experience that you really hone in on?
There's quite a lot of people, but say Louis Bennett from the kind of culture piece and how to get the most out of young guys. You know, we're at UWM, not had a lot of resources. We would run 3 miles every day to training ground and back. But the whole culture and essentially to get everyone on board, to get the most out of the talent that you have. That you don't always have to ask for better players, but you can do a lot with what you have. Brian Marwood, just from his leadership perspective and how he kind of leads at City Football Group, I thought he was fantastic. I learned a lot from, you know, even Claudio Reyna, David Lee, Patrick Vieira. When I was in conversation with Garth Lagerwey, learned a lot from him in terms of strictly to MLS. And then there's some players that I've, you know, watched or worked. There's a person called Zdenek Psotka, who's today the CEO, sporting director of Brno in second division. He was at Olomouc when I was on trial there. Combination of people.
So MLS,
yes,
you clearly know what you want. Like, this is a common theme throughout your life, as you've described it to me. Was working in MLS always a goal for you?
Yes, in the sense that, I mean, I had the opportunity to work in MLS. So I kind of crossed that off my list, and it was an amazing experience being part of City Football Group and then NYCFC, working with good people, and we built what I thought was a juggernaut. And if Pat wouldn't have left, I think there would be a legacy. And then it's a fantastic organization and done a very good job. I then wanted the experience of England, hence going to UK. What changed after my kind of almost three seasons at Barnes in UK is I wanted to be in a place, didn't necessarily have to be MLS, but I wanted to be in a place where I thought the league was growing. There was a good stadium, good facilities, etc. And when you actually start putting those things together, MLS becomes one of the top destinations in the world, in my opinion. It's a good league. It's growing on off the pitch. It has good facilities, a variation of football styles. You get exposed to a different kind of, not only styles, but weather conditions. The reason Eric Ramsey even, you know, took a choice to come here, because MLS is a lot more international than you actually think, just of how it's put together. So yes, MLS ended up being a natural step in my career. And I'm very happy that I'm here and very happy that I'm at Minnesota United.
So play imagination with me here for a second. We're sitting next to each other on an airplane. I don't know you. You don't know me. We're scouting in Europe. You are, and I'm on business or something. I know the game. I don't know MLS. I certainly don't know Minnesota United. How would you describe this club that you now lead on the soccer side, the city that you now live in and represent, and the soccer culture that you're trying to capture?
I'd say you are going to come to a place that treats you with respect. We take care of everyone. It's a collaborative environment. We know what we want in the sense that both long-term or short-term, there's a lot of KPI, so there's clarity in our vision. Very innovative city with all the Fortune 500 companies. Very innovative club in the sense of kind of what they built with the fans and the stadium. And I would say don't underestimate us. And I look at someone like Columbus Crew. I think Tim and them have done a fantastic job. I look at what they've done, and I, you know, tell everybody, why could that not be Minnesota United?
What are you most proud of to go on the field from the first two games? What are you most proud of so far? It's been a short 180-minute journey, but I'm sure that those are 180 minutes that you were hanging on.
Yeah, look, I think I'm most proud of that, you know, my colleagues, the players, the staff have been able to block out all the noise and kind of uncertainty. You can look at it from an uncertainty perspective, where I told them, or this is a potential. This is something positive. It gives us an opportunity to see how we can connect, who's going to be the leader. Because when, you know, stormy seas need calm captains, and I think I've been most proud of how everyone's kind of bought in what we want to do with no compromise. And I think that shows specifically both first halves in both games.
Let's talk about that first half against the Crew. You talked about every club you go into being its own organism, and there's this way that you want to play with Minnesota United. In the first 20 minutes in particular, it was a little bit of a surprise to me the way that Minnesota came out and tried to press a team that has, for many, been sort of unpressable in MLS. The way they play, they want you to be that team, and you were effective. Is that first 20 minutes the Minnesota United that you want to see on the field? Is that the style, or is that just a little glimpse of what that might look like?
I think the foundation of how we want to be. I think, you know, our style will evolve over time. But yes, you know, I simply described everyone when I first came and people were asking. I said, go watch Chelsea Spurs. Spurs go down to nine men. Look what Ange does. that bravery, that confidence is what I want us to have. People will create chances on us. We will somehow adapt, whether it's weather or, you know, high altitude. But I do want us to be brave and just try to grab the game as much as we can.
Do you think it's a brave choice to hire a first team head coach that doesn't have that experience and is 32 and Eric Ramsey?
I think we did a calculated choice because the process was very, long. With several interviews. He was interviewing with several people at the club. We had a lot of good candidates, and I didn't go, you have to be 30 or 50. I said, there are some attributes that I want at the club, and the process brought Eric, and we're really excited to have Eric join us. I think if you look at a lot of the coaches in the league, you know, Pat Noonan was an assistant. Jim Curtin's journey started, it's easy to say, oh, look where Jim Curtin is today, but look where he started. You have the coach that is just hired by Montreal, Cherundolo's journey. Like, there is no perfect journey to being a successful coach. I think each club needs to just be confident in what they want from that person, and then hopefully provide an environment where we can all succeed together.
You emphasize the word intelligence repeatedly when talking about Eric's appointment. I think about intelligence, and it's such an interesting word because there's a lot of variables, right? And a lot of situations where it could apply, and a lot of people that may have it in different ways. What intelligence matters most for a manager? Can you give me tangible examples of how you envision the idea of intelligence making Minnesota United a better team?
Good point. And maybe it's lack of better terms that you overuse intelligent. First, a lot of the candidates were intelligent, right? So, but when I use that word, is someone that understands the intricacies of the game, that knows how to manage a variation of people, can sense, young, old player. You can call it street intelligence. It's also the intelligence of analytics. So I think I might have overused that word. But when I look at Eric, I think he has a combination of know-how or intelligence to be able to be a successful coach, and is intelligent enough when it comes to like self-reflection, knowing that we're not looking for ego, it's all a collaborative environment. If you can help me with a better term, please tell me.
Oh man, I'd love to be able to. I'll have to talk to Eric, and then maybe we'll get there. I haven't had the multiple dinners. I was wondering where you guys ate, but I'll save all the food questions for the other reporters who are very interested in those things.
And I'm starting to go down the list of the 55 options that was provided by staff and players.
I know how important that is. Having moved to a new place a year ago, you need to have your spots. For Eric, what's his biggest challenge here? I mean, is it just the newness of the role? Is it the newness of the league? Like, where does he have to adapt and grow quickly?
I think my experience, whether it was Neil Collins, Michael Duff, Eric Ramsey, and like kind of a lot of the coaches, maybe even when it all the way back to Patrick Vieira, is as you come in, you know, less is more, and let it grow a bit organically. Don't do too much. And I think for Eric is, you know, he's so excited, has a lot of knowledge, wants to get going. And how do we kind of organically grow that in? Because anytime a person comes into a group, there will be some sort of a dynamic shift. Whether it's negative or positive, you don't really know, but there will be a little bit of a shift. So for Eric, it's probably just, you know, be confident in who he is and what he's doing. Less is more. Trust the collaborative environment. Because there will be ups and downs, and he knows this. So I don't really see a specific challenge in that. I would say it's all a potential.
What would you say made you sure he was ready for this?
One, within the process, everyone that interviewed him ended up having him as the number one choice. Then when I listened to him and his journey to, like, you know, why he stayed as an assistant at United, and why he feels he's ready to go, kind of convinced me that this is the time. And I think that's a question for you to then ask him, is why he felt he's ready. But it's a combination of things where I thought, you know what, the environment at Minnesota United it's the right step for us and for him. For the continued growth of the club, but also his own journey.
So let's talk about the squad he has. What's the state of the roster, in your opinion? What's the salary cap puzzle that you inherited? How strong are things, and how much flexibility do you feel you have to put your own stamp on it?
I think good flexibility. We have opportunities to improve, but I have to go back to the fact that I think, you know, Minnesota United has good players. I think if you look at some of the underlying numbers last year, you know, they were supposed to finish fifth, but I think they underperformed by minus 12. Like, I don't need to reinvest. Even like, you know, I told you about Eric, less is more. Mm-hmm. That applies to me as well. Right. I could have come in, said all the staff out, all the players out. And no, you know, you have to trust what's been built in the past, whether, you know, it's been good or bad. But Adrian and the history of the club brought the club to where it's today. And I think the best way for me is analyze it and see how I can move forward. I think Garth has done a great job at Atlanta as well. Small tweaks. So the squad, I'm excited. You know, you look at our game against Crew. No Fraga, no Lod. Arriaga just came back. Pukki's not been part of the preseason. You got Guani. You got Reynoso. Caden Clark was injured for some time. Like, you have seven players that are not fully up to speed that can all, you know, contribute. You add to the fact that it was Brand's second game. Moses hasn't played for a year, came in and impacted the game. Then you got Tani. I'm actually very excited about what we have here. So we'll continue to reassess and see how we tackle the summer. But we do have roster flexibility. The cap is in a good place.
DP spot open, U22 spot open, per my understanding. We'll talk about that in a second. But you mentioned a certain Argentine number 10. One made you fall in love with the game back in the mid-80s. And you have a very traditional Argentine playmaker who is one of the best chance creators in the league, in Emmanuel Reynoso. How will he change this squad when he is back from injury? And what place does he have within the club?
I think he has an important place. But whether you do DP, homegrown, we're all in this together. So for every player that, you know, is going to step on the pitch, they need to build into the culture. And he's shown every attribute and hunger that he wants to come back. He's starting to look sharper and sharper. So we're all really excited to have him, you know, to compete, to get onto the pitch. And everyone knows his quality. So, you know, I think we're all excited for when that day comes.
One of the most fascinating periods of your career, I think, in terms of relation to now, is that 2015 to 2021. You know, serving as the CONCACAF and Scandinavia scouting lead for CFG, and then supporting New York City FC. You've mentioned KPIs, you've mentioned analytics here, the underlying numbers. You've got your MBA. There's a data analyst aspect to your vision of how to run things that's very clear. And Garth Lagerwey told us just last week that, well, that was one of the main changes that he made when he arrived in Atlanta. How do you think analytics should be used in the game? What's the best way for you to get results from that part of your sporting organization?
So I look at analytics as, you know, another source of information, one that can challenge you and sometimes strengthen you. So we're looking at using analytics in the way we recruit, the way we look at pre-game, post-game, corners, throw-ins. Do you do in-swingers, out-swingers? Where do you throw the ball in? I think there's a marginal gain in all of this, but it's all together. You can't just go, we're going to go all in on analytics, because there's a human element in this sport that is very important, in my opinion, that I've learned. There's a gray area of what I call culture, and you can't really touch, or cohesiveness or collaboration between players. And the game is extremely dynamic. You have so many moving parts. Give you example, you know, Wembley final last year. We were the better team, and I'll stand by it. And we ended up losing it because of some factors you can't control.
So let's talk deeper now about this use of data and this open DP spot. Like, what is the right strategy, in your opinion, for designated player spots? I know you just said, hey, look, everybody's in it together. But the reality of Major League Soccer and roster building in Major League Soccer is that you have very specific buckets that you have to assign and fill. And it matters what sort of production you get, depending on the investment and the cap hit. So how do you see the right use of designated player spots? What's the Minnesota United strategy under Khalil Ahmad?
So I think for the DP spot is one, see what's working first here. And then, you know, along with when the coaches settle and everything, to see how, what position and what is the best possible player we can get for that spot or allocation of money. We're calm in the sense that we don't necessarily have to fill it now. And I think completely agree with you. If you look at some of the DPs that have been very successful, you know, Cucho showed us how important he is for Crew. But I also know that if you make a mistake, it has a massive impact on it. So we're going to be calm to see how we're going to fill it and when we're going to fill it, which position. We'll see that as well.
Cucho Hernandez is one of the best signings in this league's history. He's also one of the most expensive. Do you have that type of financial backing from the club to go make a $8, $10 million signing for Minnesota United?
I think all indications is that the owners are here to support the club. And then it's for you know, us to decide together, do we want to do that investment? And maybe we can find a very good player for less. Or we might decide that we go more of a younger DPs versus senior DPs. So I think it's a conversation we continue to have. But, you know, the owners have been great privately funding the stadium. I think if we would come with a case of how it's going to help us over time, they would be willing to listen.
So what did you learn at CFG in New York City? Because that's such a good team. I mean, the sustained success from that team, and then the peak that they hit at the, not end of the project, but what ended up feeling a little bit like it, the natural ending of that project. What did you learn in helping build that roster?
I think, you know, we were very good on having depth in the squad. It wasn't just about the top end players. You know, I remember when we brought Alexander Ring and Cayenne. These are players that didn't really play. They were at 250K at the cap, I think it kept the cap at that time. You know, so I would say the squad balance. We had a very specific way to build the team and how we wanted to build the team. We had a leadership group and a coach that was very clear on how we wanted to play. But I would say we got the most out of every signing. And if you look at the teams that have been successful since, whether it's NYCFC or Seattle or Crew, they do hit that cap really well. Like, they use it really, really well.
What's the best way to scout for MLS production? I mean, you had to do it. You succeeded doing it at New York City. What are the best? How do you know? What are the markers where you're like, I think this guy is going to translate?
I think players that actually have legs, because there's a lot of space, because there's, you know, travels, you need a bit of freshness and mobility within the players. So that was something we looked at. We were very, very specific in type of, you know, Maxi Morales, even though he was a number 10, but he had a lot of energy. Tati, striker, ran a lot. Same with the wingers and the defenders, with Anton Tinnerholm. Like, there's always energy in and around those players to be able to cover cover space and be mobile. I think that's an important attribute for this league. I've also found that you can find players everywhere. You know, like, it doesn't have to be South America, it doesn't have to be Scandinavia. I think as soon as you, as a club, know what it is that you want, you should be able to find good players for your system.
Is there a player during that time, or a negotiation, or a moment that you think is a good example of what you would want to do with Minnesota United? I mean, Anton Tinnerholm jumps out to me as you know, a guy that might fit in the sort of culture that you're looking for, in the sort of weather that you live in and play in Minnesota, and the sort of high quality that can change a team.
Well, definitely Anton at that time was a perfect addition to NYCFC, and that type of personality and player would do well here. But I think actually he'd do well at any team in the league. Not any specific player. Like, there's so many good players. There's good players at NYCFC. There's been good players at other teams that, you know, I thought were very good and are very good today. I even like the fact of how MLS teams have grown their scouting departments. I think, you know, back in 2015, 16, City Football Group had a specific advantage with all of us kind of scouts. But if you look at, you know, Houston, Crew, all these teams now have European scouts data. Like, it's really exciting to see that the level of scouting and recruitment is also becoming better and better, which you can see with some of the top talent choosing to come here versus Europe.
It can't all be foreign recruitment, of course. And you think that NYCFC team, and I think of James Sands and Tavon Gray in the 2021 final. And then I see the headline that you've knocked a wall down in your offices to separate or to bring together first team and academy staff. That is dripping in symbolism there, Khaled. That is like one of those, it's a perfect anecdote, but what do you hope it accomplishes more practically?
You know, I think two players I forgot when you asked me about the success of NYCFC, Tony Rocha, Sebastian Ibaiaga. Very, very good signings, very important, hit the cap correctly, and what we got out of them was fantastic. And I think if you look at Sebastian Ibaiaga, he's had title since, same with Malte Amundsen, you know, that I brought from Bailey as two titles and three finals, like without being overly too expensive players. I think our responsibility as clubs, yes, we want to win titles, but I think we really, really need to continue to grow the game, to have clear pathways and alignment from top to bottom. And that's what I wanted to do, is we're collaborative, we're all in. We don't talk about MNF, UFC 2 or Academy or First Team. We're just Minnesota United. And I think that's very important, that we're all in this together. You've already seen it, whether it's been Luik, we had Darius, Cage, various players with us into preseason, and hopefully we're going to be able to continue provide young players the opportunity so everyone in Minnesota can go feel what I felt back in 1986, but actually at home. You know, they should be able to go, I want to be here one day. And it's easy to talk about it, but you actually have to show that you mean it. And one of the reasons to, you know, symbolism of it is to tear that wall down that separated us.
How much talent is there in Minnesota? Like, as you got into this job or asked around, like, how many kids per year? Is there a goal of the academy as it relates to supporting the first team?
I think in general, if you get, you know, 1 to 3 players into the first team that start, whether you're Man City or Minnesota United, you've done a good, great job. The responsibility is also socially, you're, you know, providing players for other clubs. And I think, you know, you look at Jackson, who's a St. Louis, was in Minnesota, top player. You got Luik that's now come and got an opportunity. So I do think there's talent in the area. And I do think it's a space we can improve. And I'll be, you know, how are we using MNUFC too? What is the purpose of the MLS Next Pro? Is it a good setup? Can we do that different or better? All those questions are going to be asked, and see how we can develop the best possible players for for United, Minnesota United.
Two more questions for you. One that I got a lot from Loons fans was, what's the future of Cameron Knowles? They seem to really like their guy, and obviously he's getting some results right now. What will happen with Cameron Knowles?
So Cameron Rose, still part of the club, is on the contract, and I see him, you know, be part of the first team staff.
There you go. Straightforward. I'll end you with this one. Back to the imagination session. 4 years from now, how does this organization function in your mind? How does the team play? I come to a Minnesota United match. Maybe I was that guy on the airplane who didn't know anything. What do I see? What is in your mind's eye, Khaled?
That... regardless of how we do, we're nice, professional, and we take care of our staff and our visitors. That's for me number one. So, you know, surrounded by good people and having positivity in what we're doing, because, you know, we're all in one way custodians. And I think that's very important in an environment that's essentially all about trying to win a title. I would hope that we are competitive consistently, and the way we play, I think, will evolve. What you see this year with, you know, I take Liverpool as a great example. When Klopp first came to Liverpool, it was a lot more counter-pressing and directness. And he's over time brought in different type of wingers and Thiago more midfielder to control the game. And I, as the game evolves, I would hope that we are innovative and collaborative and smart to continue to evolve as well.
Learned a lot here, Khalid, about your vision about where Minnesota United is going. And I just want to say, welcome back to the Upper Midwest, man.
Thank you much. You know, great to be on this show and be part of the voice of MLS.
Wink, 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 wink. I didn't pay him to say that, folks. Thank you so much, Khalid. Best of luck going forward with the Loons.
Thank you.
Big thanks to Khalid Olmadd for joining the show. New chief soccer officer in Minnesota. I got to tell you, listening to the interview, talking to Khalid, I was impressed. He feels like the sort of candidate with his history in, you know, upper Midwestern soccer, his connections through UW Milwaukee to all these Twin Cities soccer legends of the past, his experience at City Football Group in CONCACAF in Scandinavia. Oh, hello, Minnesota. All these things sort of add up. And he says he wants his team, his organization to be nice. This man was made in a laboratory for Minnesota United. Now, that does not mean that he's guaranteed to have success. It does not mean that trophies are incoming. It doesn't mean this incredible arc to the Minnesota United story, but it does feel like a good hire. And I got a little bit more faith in what they're doing in Minnesota. All right, before we get to Mariano Trujillo, who will finish the show out, he is the analyst on the Spanish side on MLS Season Pass for LAFC Sporting Kansas City. You can watch that one on Saturday night, 10:30 p.m. Eastern. Immediately following that is MLS Wrap-Up, both in English and Spanish, where we get you all the highlights and wrap up the full Saturday slate. In the meantime, Andres has given me permission to do one list on this show. I have 90 seconds. So, Andres, please start the timer. Here we go. It is my duty to sell to you every single game in MLS Match Day 4. New York City hosting Portland at 2 p.m. Eastern. Will Evander show back up for Portland? Will New York City show up at all? Nick Cushing under pressure at Yankee Stadium. All these young, talented players, can they deliver? Toronto, Charlotte, 2 p.m. Eastern time. John Herdman, it's working, everyone. Federico Bernardeschi is a wingback, and Charlotte are reborn under Dean Smith. Two new-ish managers. I know, John, you were there last year trying to pick up some early season points at BMO Field. Atlanta, New England, Esmir, Barakterovic, just watch this kid. He is so fun to watch. Meanwhile, Atlanta, a little bit of an egg in match day one. Then they had an early bye back for their second match at home against New England, who might be a little knackered from the CONCACAF Champions League, but with a 4-0 lead, should be able to focus on this game. Columbus, Chicago, I know I got to speed up, Anders. It's the reigning champs. It's Chicago who shot themselves in the foot last week. Can Kuipers get his first goal? Can Columbus show us the football that make us so excited to watch them week after week? New York Red Bulls hosting Dallas, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. Dallas has a terrible record in recent history against the New York Red Bulls, but they got a new record DP signing. Jesus Ferreira might be ready to start, and unfortunately, it seems like Yadamendi won't play in this match. So who plays in midfield? Who plays at wingback? That new system, can that blunt the Red Bulls' press? Orlando, Minnesota, never going to get through 90 seconds on this. I apologize to everyone who has witnessed to this awful, awful attempt. Can Orlando bounce back? Can Minnesota keep it rolling? I already gave you a full interview with Minnesota, so don't whine about that. Philly, Seattle, is Carranza back, or do they rest him for CONCACAF Champions League? And how on earth can the Sounders create clear-cut chances after a 0-0 draw at home against Austin? Speaking of Austin, they go to St. Louis. Can they survive the press? Can Sam Adeniran shoot a ball through a net? We will find out. Rocky Mountain Cup, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, RSL, Colorado. Just waiting to see the building blocks for Chris Armas. On the road in a rivalry match, let's bring him out. It's time. Meanwhile, RSL don't have Pablo Ruiz for the rest of the year. How do they cope? And can Andres Gomez play the same on grass as he does on snow? Already sold you on LAFC Sporting Kansas City, so we'll skip that one to San Jose, Vancouver. Amal Pellegrino, come on down. I need goals from you, please, sir. Cincinnati, D.C. on the weekend. D.C. have the most expected goals in Major League Soccer. And that was without Benteke for a complete game. Let's see if they can do it in Cincinnati. Nashville, L.A., talent the Tyler Boyd Bowl. He's been pretty good, folks, honestly. L.A., always fun. These new wingers, come on, Pansa, what can you do? In Miami, Montreal, it's the messy game, but it's a Laurent Courtois game. Montreal will sit back, take space away. That makes it hard for Miami, and they'll try to hit on the counter. Let's see if they can do it. How many seconds was that? Anders, you weren't even timing. Amazing. Let me know at home. In the meantime, let's get to Mariano. Enjoy. All right, another happy hour guest stopping by. Mariano Trujillo, let me buy you a drink, man. Talk a little soccer. How you
doing? That's amazing. Pretty good. Thank you.
If we were at happy hour right now, what would you order? You know, it's after work. Maybe it's, you know, 4:30 p.m. Maybe we're overlooking an ocean in L.A., let's say.
I don't drink alcohol, but I will get, you know, I'm going to show you what I'm drinking, actually. Look, a little mate. A little mate. Yeah, you know, I like it. And at this time of the day, especially right now in Southern California, it's rainy, which is weird. And it's a little bit cold. So that's perfect. That's perfect.
Did you pick the mate habit up off teammates? Where did this come from for you?
Yeah, when I was 17 years old, that was my first preseason. One of my teammates from Argentina, I was in the same room with him, and he told me, okay, you don't have any option. I don't like to drink him by myself. This is a tradition, so you have to pass it around. So we were drinking mate every single day, the first 2 or 3 days. I didn't enjoy it at all. But then I got used to it. You know, it's a little bitter and I like it. And then I got my own kid. I got my own stuff. And then since I was 17, I drink mate.
An acquired taste. And you have certainly acquired that taste. I'm guessing you haven't acquired the taste for snow games, Mariano. What'd you think of this LAFC RSL snow game that Steve Trundle was not super overjoyed about, let's say?
Yeah, no, he wasn't happy. It is kind of hard to play when it's raining, when the elements are like that. It's kind of hard to focus only on the game. You have to adjust and adapt and sometimes play the way you don't like to play. You know, we know LAFC likes to have possession of the ball and knock the ball from one side to another. Under those circumstances, you have to change and adapt. And obviously, they didn't do well. I think they gave up after they conceded the second goal. It wasn't the same LAFC that we saw against Seattle. I don't like it at all. I had the experience to play a couple of times like that, and I couldn't feel my toes. You know, the equipment and the technology is better now, but still, it's uncomfortable.
Where are players right now? Like, in their fitness, in their preparation, where are teams? Because I'm on this show, I'm on season pass, and you're making these big judgments, like, this can't happen. But you always have to go back to sort of, it's match day 3 at the most for everyone. Match day 2 for many. Some are in CONCACAF Champions Cup. From a player's perspective, where would you expect these guys, these clubs, to be right now?
If I can give you a percentage, I will tell you 65 to 70%. And the reason why is because you have a long preseason. If you compare MLS to other leagues, they have a lot of time to prep. They have a lot of games. They have enough time to prep fitness-wise. So I believe when we have match day 1, they should be... If not 100%, obviously, close to it, you know, and as they play more games, and more games, I mean, match day 4, match day 5, we can see actually the idea. And I've seen a couple of teams actually fitness-wise in good shape, and obviously it's different to be in good shape, and it's different to be in game shape, which is probably what they're lacking right now, a few teams.
Game shape, a little sharpness, maybe a player or two. You're on LAFC Sporting Kansas City this weekend. A player that LAFC are wondering whether they'll have again, whose locker is still full of his stuff, is Carlos Vela. What do you make of this whole Carlos Vela? Will he re-sign with LAFC? Will he go to San Jose? Could he go elsewhere, maybe Liga MX? What do you make of the whole thing?
Well, I think he's taking his time. He knows what he represents to the franchise. He was the first ever player that wore that jersey, and he likes it. He's loved by the fans. He's loved by the league. I think he has led by example. I think it will be the perfect marriage, if I can use that word. It will be the perfect final for his career if he plays for LAFC. If he decides to retire after that, he won't be the DP player that he was before, but I think he can add to what LAFC has right now. And it will be smart from Steve Cherundolo in the front office to have Carlos Vela. Because I know Carlos, and I know when his status changes, he will have the chip on his shoulder, and he will try to prove that he still is that DP player, and that will be beneficial for LAFC, for the fans, for the league, and obviously thinking on what they have ahead, the different competitions, you always want a super sub, and Carlos Vela can be that.
Maybe he's a little bit like you, Mariano. Once he's in LA, man, you just can't get him out. He just wants to stay. It's too beautiful. The lifestyle is too good.
It is. You know, I had the chance to speak with him and asking him about going back to Mexico. And he asked me why you didn't go back to Mexico. He's like, well, you have a point. You're here, right? So I couldn't ask about that anymore. But yeah, you're right. I mean, living here, the way the fans receive them, the way you live in Los Angeles, the weather, everything is nice. His family is happy here. So I think he's actually hoping. I don't know if hoping is the right word, but he wants to stay with LAFC. And from what I heard, LAFC is willing to sign him again.
That's the best possible scenario, right? For Carlos personally, to finish out a legendary career, to have that relationship between player and club go sort of unbroken. Hey, you were here, you stayed here, you retired here. I mean, it changes the way a player thinks about a club, how fans think about a player, that player's place. I mean, it's just, that's a relationship that's super deep.
Yeah, and you know what? I think that will set an example, because nowadays in soccer, franchises or clubs demand loyalty from players, but you're an asset. And when you're not that anymore, it's easy for the clubs to say, well, thank you for your service. Good luck. And I think, you know, from LAFC doing that to Carlos Vela, I think it will be great. And they will set the tone for what in those cases should be done by certain clubs.
All right, let's talk assets. Maybe not assets, but a number nine profile, let's say. Matheus Bouguas, beautiful goal in the opening win against Seattle. Not a lot of soccer played for LAFC in the snow against RSL. What's the right number nine profile for this LAFC team in your mind?
You know, I think they have the right guy, and I'm excited about Tomás Ángel. I've known him since he was probably 10 years old, because I had the privilege to play with his dad with Chivas USA, and he was at the training ground with us kicking the ball, and you can see all the technique and qualities that he had. He did amazing with Atlético Nacional in Colombia. I've been following him, and I think he's the right number nine for LAFC. He has a nose for the goal, but also he can play that number 10 position to link up with the midfielders. He likes to go to the sideline, even if he doesn't have to. But with the quality of players that LAFC has on the sidelines, I think he can be the perfect finisher, you know, capable to create his own chances, but also to be that number nine that will pin the two center backs to create spaces on the flanks. But I have another name for you.
Okay. I'll hear it.
Henry Martin from Club America. He's finishing his contract with Club America. Different characteristics, but I love Henry Martin. He's a national team player. Yeah, he's 31, but he's mature. He understands how to play. He has grown as a number nine so much in the last few years. He knows what competing at a great level is playing for America, and it will be the same competing for or with LAFC. So I think those two style of players will be perfect for LAFC.
Let's speak it into reality, Mariano. Let's speak Henry Martin, you're coming to LAFC. Germán Beltrame, you might be coming to Portland well. There's so many links, and we were together last summer for a good bit of time during Leagues Cup, and seeing those links, come together in competitive matches. This transfer market between the two leagues feels to me like it's poised to really explode. How do you see it?
I see it the same way. Brandon Vázquez is killing it over there in Liga MX. Kate Cowell is adapting and adjusting. It was a little bit of a surprise for me to see Kate Cowell going to Chivas, but Rodriguez, Cabecita Rodriguez from America, probably if he's not close to Portland Timbers. Berterame is a great player. Atletico de Madrid scouted him back in the day, and he sent him to Mexico, you know, for him to develop. And now he landed in Monterrey. I think it will be a great move for Berterame for the league. And I actually like that now Liga MX is turning to MLS to say, like, hey, I like that player, bring him. But also MLS is looking to, okay, now they have the power. Now they have more DP spots, and they can bring players to have more quality on the field. Some coaches have been outspoken about that, have more DP players. And I think bringing Berterame, Cabecita Rodriguez, those names, will help the league to grow.
Portland would pray that Germán Beltrame could match the production of Denny Bawanga, for instance. Denny had one of the seasons he had a career year for himself, for just about any player last year, 38 goals. How does he follow up this year to take us back to LAFC?
That's kind of hard. You know, when you reach that amount of goals, it's difficult. And I saw Denny Bawanga in a couple of games, and I remember, especially against Miami FC, I saw a little bit of selfishness in Denny Bawanga trying to score more goals. And I think him scoring those goals, it was a consequence of the way the team was playing. When he changed that in a few games, he wasn't as accurate as he was the rest of the season. So if he changed his mindset of, I'm just going to play and the opportunities will come, I'm pretty sure he will get close to that number. I don't know if he will get that. It's an amazing amount of goals. But there's a thin line of trying to get to that number and just playing the game and have fun, because it's fun to play for LAFC.
There was a relentlessness to him last year and a single-mindedness, right? Of like, when it's time, when I have space in front of me, when I think I can beat a player off the dribble, when I can shoot from a position anywhere in front of the 18 with either foot, it felt like an aggressiveness that we don't see much, even from strikers. Joseph Martinez is a guy that reminds me of that. Can I get a scouting report from you, by the way, on Omar Campos?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. New player, big transfer fee, a young guy, could be one of the best left backs in the league for LAFC.
He had a couple of chances to go to Europe, to go to Brazil. I know him very well. He was with Santos Laguna. I know Santos Laguna pretty good. They work amazingly with their academy. And he was one of the best in the last few years for Santos Laguna. He likes to go forward. He's very technical. He used to play as a left winger. He was an attacking-minded player, and he hasn't changed. Speaking with Steve Cherundolo, he was telling us that, yeah, he has that, but he needs to learn how to defend, especially here in this league. It's completely different than Liga MX. It's more physical. There's more pace. There's some other elements that he needs to adjust. But I believe Chiqui Palacios did an amazing job with LAFC, but with Omar Campos, that position is well covered.
What do you think Steve Cherundolo's biggest challenge is this year, Mariano? Like, what's the task in front of him with LAFC?
To add another dimension to his attack. I think we all know that this LAFC team has a great transition going forward. And when Bob Bradley was with the team, it was more like a tiki-taka style. Steve Cherundolo recognized that, and he said, well, there are moments that we can play that way, but we also need to be fast going forward. And against Columbus Crew, I think Wilfred Nancy read that very well, and they were predictable. They were predictable. So now with Eduardo Atuesta, with Omar Campos, with Martinez, with Tomas Angel, I think you have players that can play that fast transition going forward, but also they feel comfortable having the ball in the middle of the field, creating spaces. If he can put all those pieces together, he will have both options depending on the rival they're facing. If it's Seattle, if it's Columbus Crew, they will have more tools to face their opponents.
We know the level LAFC played at last year. So many finals, just no cups. Sporting Kansas City sort of turned it on middle of the year and on, and really went on a run that saved their season after a terrible start in the first 10 games. So I'm going to give you a choice, Sporting Kansas City or LAFC. Which team has the better season in the Western Conference?
Wow. That's a tough one because they have similar styles. I like both. I like Peter Vermes a lot. And I like him because nowadays a coach, when he's not successful, he tries to change these and that. And some of them do it drastically. Peter Vermes has all his 4-3-3 formation with some nuances throughout the years. But I love him. You know, I love that attacking-minded team. Graham Souza is not there anymore. Espinosa is not there anymore. But they have players that are very dynamic in the middle of the field. You know, I will say Sporting KC. Sporting KC, because they have that chip on their shoulder. They were pretty close after a rough start last season. And I think they have that desire of accomplishing something that they couldn't last season.
You know, Peter Vermes was coaching with Sporting Kansas City while you were still playing for Chivas USA back in yes. The day, Mariano. Vermes just hit 500 games as a manager of one club, if my memory serves correct. Help me put that into perspective as someone who's played, who's around the game in the depth that you are. That is an unbelievable number to me.
It is. It's not normal. It's uncommon. Nowadays, soccer has become a factory of players, coaches, because the most important thing is the result. The long-term project is not there anymore. We used to saw that in Europe with Sir Alex Ferguson, for example. But now you see teams like Chelsea changing players, coaches, and it's the urgency of the results. I'm happy for Peter Vermes. I like him as a coach. I like him as a person. And that's just a reflection of who he is. Because one thing is coaching and winning games and winning trophies, something that he has done as a player and as a coach. But the other thing is just to create relationships with human beings, with players. And I think in order to be there for that long, you have to be a good person. You have to be that not only soccer coach, but kind of life coach that helped their teammates and the individuals to grow. And I think he has done that with Sporting KC.
He's going to have to play that role with Alan Pulido. Getting the best out of Pulido is Peter Vermes' job. That's what you pay the money for. It's why you give him the long-term contract to stay. What do you think Alan will do this year? Last year was a huge bounce-back, comeback year for Pulido. How many goals? What do you think? What's he capable of?
Well, the way Sporting KC is playing, at least in these last two games, they created a lot of opportunities. Alan Pulido scored one. It was overturned. But I think he's going to be close to 20 something. He scored 14. He couldn't play the first part of the season last year. He was injured. He was coming back. Now I see him in good shape, but he needs to tweak some stuff for him to be that Alan Pulido that we know, that he only needed a little bit of space to put the ball in the back of the net. Now I see him more as a number 10, trying to link with the other midfielders and the wingers. He has to be that killer inside of the box. And I think he has that. Little by little, hopefully he can maybe play more games. That will depend on Peter Vermes, but I think he can get close to that 20 number.
All right. Whistle blows. We're watching the game Saturday. You're analyzing all of this, taking it in. Tell me where your eyes go, where your mind goes as you start to watch this LAFC Sporting Kansas City match. What's most interesting to Mariano Trujillo?
Two players, Radoya and Ilya Sanchez. They play 4-3-3, different formation, same formation, a mirror. And when you have that, your holding midfielder is a key to provide balance, but also to outnumber your rival in the middle of the field. I think those two players will be key. They're very similar. They're very technical. They read the game very well. They understand how to build up from the back, creating a numerical advantage in the initial third. But they also know how to keep the team together. I love to have possession of the ball. I love that as a player, and I love it as an analyst. And I think those two players will be key. The other matchup that catches my eye is Omar Campos and Russell. That will be a good one because Omar Campos likes to go forward. He will leave plenty of space. Can Russell track him down and then use the space that he's leaving defensively? So that will be also an interesting one.
All right, watch it through Mariano's eyes. That game's 10:30 p.m. Eastern. MLS season pass. You can hear Mariano's takes in Spanish. Mariano, I got to hit you on Messi in Miami, man. I can't let you go without it. This is it's interesting in a way that whether you love it or hate it, you cannot look away, this project. What would your game plan be against Messi in Miami? If you're a Laurent Courtois this weekend and Messi is Suarez, Alba, these are the guys you're game planning against, how would you try to stop them?
Pressure. I know it's going to be very demanding, and I know it's impossible to pressure through 90 minutes and a little bit more, but when these guys have space, they will kill you. They understand the game. They don't need to move much. We all know what happened with Messi and the Netherlands in the World Cup, right? He wasn't moving much, but yet he created a lot of opportunities. The same thing happened against Orlando. I remember Tata Martino saying, we're using Messi too much. We cannot rely on Messi this much because in the long term, we're not going to be able to create. Well, Messi was cruising against Orlando. The other team, his teammates were able to create stuff. If you put pressure on Luis Suarez, Lionel Messi, and not just them, but the rest of the team, the back line, they like to build that from the back. If you make them predictable, you will have a better chance to stop him. It's almost impossible because they don't need much. But I will say high pressure. And if you need to make substitutions to keep doing it, go ahead and do it.
You got a better chance, but it's high stakes gambling, right?
Yeah.
you probably the house usually wins. You're probably walking away from the table empty handed. That's what Miami hopes this year. And Miami are in the Champions League getting their debut on Thursday night. I believe that's going to happen in a couple hours here. So we don't know what's going to happen there. But I am curious because you straddle the fence between MLS and your experiences in Liga MX. Who you think from Major League Soccer has the best chance of repeating what the Seattle Sounders did and winning Champions Cup? Who left?
I really like Columbus Crew. You know, I know Nashville is tough. Miami has the experience and the pedigree with these players, that caliber of players. But Columbus Crew, I love it. It's like a perfect machinery. They work together. They understand their roles. They understand their movements. They use of the spaces is there for them. And as a coach, to accomplish that, it's so complicated, because if one of them is not working together with the team, it doesn't happen. Hernandez, Farsi, Matan, all of them, you name it, they understand what they need to do and what the team needs at that specific moment. And the intensity that they bring to the game, honestly, I don't see even the big names in Mexico, Monterrey, Tigres, America, I see them struggling against a Columbus Crew team that is, it's my favorite, to be honest, if I had to choose one.
Crew got a little bit of a taste in Leagues Cup. Now they're trying to apply it in the CONCACAF Champions Cup. Got a 1-0 lead right now against the Houston Dynamo in the round of 16. Of course, here in a couple hours as well, Monterrey taking on Cincinnati. Brandon Vasquez on center stage. Mariano, this is not the last time we will do this, man. We will get together. I'll you know what? I'm going to get a rig. I'll get some mate. We will sit down virtually and share a cup, man. Share a cup. Thank you so much for dropping by.
No, thank you. It's always my pleasure. Anytime you want, I'll be here for you.
An absolute joy to chat with Mariano Trujillo. An amazing career he's had. An amazing dude. One of the biggest joys of my first year at MLS Season Pass was sitting around during Leagues Cup with Mariano, talking about soccer, talking about Liga MX, and learning. Above all, learning from his experiences. Anders reports that my little monologue about match day 4 came in at 2 minutes, 46 seconds. And what can I say, folks? I tried. In the meantime, enjoy your weekend. Enjoy match day 4. We'll see you back on Monday to break it all down. Adios.